Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Fitness Kinder Podcast. My guest today is Andrew Jackson. Andrew is Barbell Logic's Chief Operating Officer. So Andrew has a very diverse background. Andrew, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us how you went from being a Pac-10 first team all-conference rower at Oregon State to earning your bachelor's degree in computer engineering and a master's engineering in engineering management, from serving in the U.S. Navy, then working in the aerospace and electronics industry for a decade, to becoming a strength coach for arguably one of the biggest online strength coaching companies on the internet.
I will try to do my best to explain it, but I can't say that it makes any sense. I think about it often that if you were to ask me 25 years ago to map this path out, there's no way I could have done it, which also feeds into how I think about my future now, because I catch myself sometimes worrying or wondering what's next or what am I going to do, and try to map it out. But life has just had a way of evolving in different, so many different directions that I kind of focus more on being present in getting the most out of the moment now. But the way it started was really a path initially of choosing the college that I got, the one school I got into, which was Oregon State University, and on a presidential scholarship, which comes into the story later and how I got into the Navy. But got into rowing. I'd played all kinds of different sports growing up, and didn't have any aspirations or plans to play sports in college, but was walking through campus and the crew coach for the freshman team was recruiting anybody basically over 6 feet to come out for the physical activity course, which was a requirement for the bachelor's degree. So I thought, well, what the heck, I'll go try this out. And I got hooked on rowing. I remember making this decision at the end of the class. It was just the first quarter, 12 weeks. And I remember thinking, I'm either going to quit now or I'm going to do this for the next 4 years. And there's a part of me that has a competitive nature that really enjoyed being on the start line and pushing myself every single day. And this is how I also got into barbell training, is I remember going down into the weight room. I had done some lifting in high school, but in terms of like structured training, it wasn't until college as part of the crew team that I went down into this dungeon of a weight room where the football team would train. And facilities are much nicer now, but this was over 25 years ago. And the guys just, the strength coach down there was like, go put that bar on your back and squat for 3 sets of 10, you know, until it's hard. And I remember doing that first, I think it was probably 135 pounds for 3 sets of 10. And it was one of the hardest things I'd ever done, you know, physically up until that point. And there was just something about that, something being hard that I'm attracted to. So I did 4 years of rowing, got my degree. I went into computer engineering because I, at the time, remember looking at what you could get from a starting salary from different degrees. And at the top of the list in 1997 or 1996, when I was applying for schools, it was computer engineering. And that was one of my first, in hindsight, mistakes in terms of what I actually value, because I made many decisions throughout my initial career that were around prioritizing how much top line revenue I could make.
Sure. Okay.
So which comes into the story later as I start talking about how I got out of that kind of worldview. But by the end of my senior year or junior year, I was pretty burnt out on sitting in front of a computer. And none of the jobs I was interviewing with seemed to really be attractive to me. And then I got this email as part of that scholarship that I was on, the presidential scholarship, basically a full academic ride, talking about this nuclear engineering program. And in my mind, I thought, well, the Navy's going to pay me to go to school, learn how nuclear reactors work. That sounds kind of fun.
All right.
Sounds hard. So I ended up signing up to go into the Navy. And that was a 6-year journey. I actually technically was enlisted for my senior year of college, which was pretty cool because I was getting a paycheck and paid for a lot of beer money at the time. But
Right. Made you pretty popular with everybody else.
parties. Yeah, I was very where I was invited to a lot of parties. But being on the crew team, we really could only do one night a week, really, because we were practicing 6 days a week, usually once or twice a day. So yeah, it wasn't super crazy, but anyways, yeah, getting a paycheck was nice, covering rent and paying off all my debt basically was attractive. Went in the Navy, did that for 6 years. I signed up before this was so I was actually in officer candidate school on 9/11.
Wow.
So it wasn't part of why I signed up, but it became a huge part of the experience because that obviously completely changed the
Sure.
military during that period of time. But really good leadership experience, getting thrown right into leading, you know, as an officer responsible for 15 to 30, you know, junior enlisted sailors and all of the equipment and maintenance. You know, it's just kind of a trial by fire way of learning leadership skills. Got out of the Navy and thought, well, I think the next thing to do is learn how business works. And so I just kind of interviewed around until I found somebody who I thought would help me kind of take me on as a mentor. And she, you know, it was a good role in electronics manufacturing in mostly defense and military applications. But really the value most valuable piece was that this guy was kind of going to pull me up the ranks, which really accelerated my career.
Okay.
And got to do that during that also during the to answer your question about the master's degree, that was something that the Navy offered was a remote learning program, which was kind of unique at the time. But got to complete a degree that included, I got credit basically for having completed nuclear power school. And during my career in manufacturing, I was really involved with lean process improvement. So the Toyota production system and applying
Oh.
that to high reliability electronics manufacturing. So it's kind of this unique application in that it was very high quality control requirements that you still had to try to find ways to eliminate waste in the process.
Oh, wow.
And worked up my way through supply chain and operations and then kind of mid-level, maybe low executive, mid-level management, low-level executive kind of positions at kind of Fortune 50 size companies. So, the companies that rolled up now, a lot of them into Raytheon. So
Okay.
went through a bunch of acquisition kind of stuff. And during that time, from a physical perspective, I was in the Navy mostly into like endurance running, biking. I would run to work, bike to work. I tried not to drive my car as much as possible. Did a lot of that kind of stuff. And then as I was transitioning out of the military in the corporate world, my mom mentioned that my stepbrother had been doing this thing called CrossFit,
Oh,
and she
yeah,
went and
let's go.
saw, yeah, he she went and saw one of his competitions, and this would have been 2009.
Oh, he was doing, oh, he went, he was doing CrossFit.
Yes, he
Okay.
was heavily into competing, and you know, the games were not what they are now, but he
No,
was
yeah.
like a regional level competitor.
Okay.
He now owns a gym in Salt Lake City, SLCC CrossFit. So you know, continued on to be a big part of his life. And anyway, she went and saw one of the competitions at the what was regionals then, and she was like, hey, I think you might like this. So I just Googled the nearest gym to my work, and it happened to be one of the early CrossFit. I think it was one of the first 10 CrossFit gyms in the country.
Oh, wow.
First thing they had me do was squat, and I thought, huh, that's interesting. I flashed back to squatting and thinking that was hard. This must be a good thing to do. So
Sure.
did CrossFit for like a year and didn't get any stronger. And I thought that was weird. And I started to feel like that was limiting my performance. I think I remember it was a 2011 games, like the Open, where you had to do a bunch of overhead you had to do some power snatch and some overhead squats. And it was,
okay,
I don't know, not even, I think it was 115 pounds. And I remember having a hard time overhead, you know, getting that overhead.
Wow.
And just thinking, this is really weird. Like, I need to be stronger. And there just happened to be a starting strength seminar that came into town. And I signed up for that. I had a newborn. She was like less than a year. She was 9 months old at the time. So taking a whole weekend and about, you know, it was like $900 to go do the seminar. My, you know, it sounded crazy at the time, but
yeah,
did it. And I went from on Friday being a paleo zone CrossFitter 5-6 times a week to
yes,
gallon of milk a day, barbell only, squat, bench press, deadlift 3 days a week
for yeah,
about a year. And you know, made some poor decisions during that period of time, but got into coaching along that period of time and started picking up more and more clients as I was continuing to try to figure out the corporate career. But it just, I just didn't feel fulfilled in that career. I was pretty good at it, but I was starting to run into limitations where in the corporate world, getting results isn't enough. That's just the,
yeah,
you know, that's the minimum barrier to entry.
Yeah. It's like why you're getting paid.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but to move up, you have to start doing increasingly more things that nobody else is willing to do, whether that's the hours or the travel or the relocation, yep, or whatever relationship building and networking that's going to take more time out of your nights and your weekends and all this kind of stuff. And I just,
yeah,
that takes a certain amount of motivation and energy and passion. I believe like the people that are able to do that are just all in on that lifestyle. And I couldn't, I was just getting stuck there. But this coaching thing, I just could, there was like limitless energy that I could put into that. I would,
right,
I would drive extra hours. I was doing meet director for USSF competitions, you know, spending weekends and nights and getting up early, consuming content and, you know, working with people. And along the way, I set up my business and started running into time constraints and thought, hey, I got to figure out how to do this remotely because I just can't be working 12, 14 hour days at the corporate thing.
Yeah.
And then driving through Seattle traffic to try to meet somebody at 7 o'clock at night or spend my weekend. And then half the time they don't, you know, not maybe not half the time, but you know, you get no shows and you know, it's like drop-ins, one-offs, things that I just were really becoming difficult to manage from a time perspective. That was in August of 2016. And then Matt Reynolds called me in November of 2016 saying, hey, I'm doing this thing. I'm starting an online coaching business. You're my first alternate.
Were you coaching out of the CrossFit gym at that time? Is that where you were?
Yes,
you were.
Yeah.
Okay,
so I was,
okay.
Yeah, I was, I had a deal worked out there where I would rent time basically.
Yep. Yeah.
Outside of their normal class hours.
Okay. Okay. And, so then Reynolds says you're my first alternate.
Yeah. He's like, I had 15 guys and gals. I had 15 coaches lined up, but the 15th one dropped out. So now you're next on my list.
Thanks, buddy.
Which he was actually one of the staff seminar coaches in that strength, that initial strength camp I did back in 2011. And I just kind of kept in touch with him over the years, going to conferences and things like that. And oddly, it's kind of a funny coincidence, but in part of my 360 feedback in my corporate job, the thing that came away from it that I wasn't doing well and that I need to do better was network. And, you know, building relationships outside of my immediate, the facility that I was working in, because I was working at these companies that had, you know, locations all over the country. And that was this perfect example where I should have taken that feedback and invested that into the corporate world. I did a little bit, but it was not really, it was pulling teeth. But I also applied that to the coaching world and thought and looked for opportunities to network more and build relationships with people. And And it happened to be in 2015, the year before Matt started that conference, that I went, or the coaching company, that I went to a conference and met up with him again face to face. And, you know, so I had that kind of connection with him, and within that community, my name came up as 16th.
Wow. Okay.
which that got me started on online coaching in December. We launched in December of 2016.
Okay.
I got my first three or four online clients there out of the launch, and have been doing that. Well, gradually built up to, I think it was 15 clients over the course of 2017. Took on more responsibility. You know, I would just throw myself at every opportunity that I could in the company as Matt would build a role or had a project. You know, we started the very, very first iteration of the coaching academy at Barbell Logic in 2017.
Yep.
And I was one of the first people to raise my hand and say, get me on this. And so I was burning the candle at both ends. By 2018, there was an opportunity for me to become what we had at the time was a team leader who would manage some of the coaches, about 10 coaches, and kind of make sure they were delivering good quality product and doing all this kind of stuff. And I signed up, and Matt gave me the opportunity. And I remember talking to him on the phone in the spring of 2018. And he asked me how many hours I was working the corporate job. And it was brutal, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'd be there till midnight, 1 a.m. So, you know, I would say most weekends I was in at least for a few hours on Saturday or Sunday and or Sunday. And then I was also getting up at 4:30 in the morning to make sure I got my coaching done online, or staying up when I got home late. And then I was also trying to do my training. And he's like, okay, it's like, you could probably do that for another year, and then you're going to crash. So we need to figure something out. And it was almost a year to the day later, would have been March of 2019. I finally got to a point where I had kind of cobbled together enough revenue streams between online coaching, the academy. I was writing some articles and doing some seminars, both like local camps. And then I was also starting to pick up some seminar work for different regions. And I had enough money saved up that I was like, I think I can make the gamble to try to make this work. I took it was about a 50%. It was more than a 50% pay cut when you factor in the bonus. And just rolled the dice. It's like, we're going to try to make this work.
Yep.
So a bit of a long story, but it's kind of weird how all the experiences leading up to that point have come back to be applicable now today that I'm running, especially now that I'm the product manager for Turnkey Coach, the software that we've built.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, for the last 4 or 5 years, I'm using my computer engineering background almost more so than I ever did since college, which is just kind of serendipitous.
You know, you go back to, and that is an awesome story. And I love hearing coaches' stories, because it you know, it's not always the typical, well, I graduated with this degree, or I met this person and I wanted to train athletes, and then I just started doing it.
Yeah.
Because it's, when you listen to your story, I hear that working for somebody else's vision. So in a corporate world, the vision's already set, and you're just kind of, you're falling into what they have for you. So it's like, hey, do these things for the vision that's already set. But then you said your 360 feedback, and you took that feedback. And even though it wasn't applied in the corporate world per se, it sounds like you found enjoyment applying that feedback to something that fed into not only yourself, but to other people that had an effect on. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, as a coach, you can say all day long, like, I love working for myself. I love the fact that I have freedom. Mm-hmm. I set my own hours. I work with the people I want to work with. I set my own rate, all these different things.
Yeah.
But really, I get to pour into somebody else. And I don't think, if you're working in a corporate setting, I feel like I bash corporate jobs a lot, and maybe I do. But I feel blessed that I haven't been, I really haven't worked in the corporate world. I worked for one corporate company for like 2.5 years before I got back into training and found Mission 5. And I've told that story a trillion times, but when you start to realize that not many people get to pour into someone else's life, I mean, truly make an impact.
Right.
You know, you're going to those client dinners and you're like taking those people out. It's like you said, it's part of the gig. It's like, that's what's expected, but that's taking
Yeah.
away from, it's taking away from you, it's taking their time. And you know, that's,
Yeah.
It's not that deep.
There were opportunities along the way to help people, but it felt nothing like what I see when I'm working with clients that experience strength for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that's really what sucked me in, probably more than anything, is that I felt like I had a meaningful impact on other people's lives. And I was around people who wanted to be there. That was probably the biggest thing that I felt was difficult in my both military and corporate career. There were very, very few people who wanted to be there. It was the thing they had to do most of the time. And I just found that really draining. I'm glad I did it. I mean, I learned things if I hadn't have done it, I couldn't be where I am today. So I actually think my perspective in hindsight is I wish I had a little bit better attitude when I was in it. I got lost in feeling like I was going to be in it forever.
Of course.
And kind of got in, you know, didn't have the, I think if I could go back, I would have enjoyed especially the military and maybe even the corporate world more if I knew that I was getting out of it at some point.
Right. Of course. Yeah. You always look back like, oh, I wish I could have taken this. I look back, people look back on their childhood that way. Like in moment, you don't realize, cause you think like, oh, this is just, it's like tunnel vision
forever. Yes.
I'm going to dabble over here, but I'm going to be stuck in this one. Yeah, man. That's
right.
That's everybody. But at least you recognize that. So that probably impacts how you operate day to day now.
Totally. I mean, I'm infinitely grateful. Every morning I wake up, I'm excited about what I'm going to go do. I love coaching still. I mean, I'm coaching every single day. Well, 6 days a week, I would say. And I love seeing my clients check-ins. And I mean, I'm 99.9% online right now through Barbalogic and using Turnkey Coach. But I just had a camp 2 weeks ago where I offered a in-person event only for my clients in the area.
Awesome.
And we got together and that's still fun. And, so yeah, like I said at the beginning, I think I have this perspective that's, you know, infinitely grateful for where I am today. And also curious to see where it's going to go next. Cause this isn't going to last forever either. So it's kind of fun to kind of fly by the seat of your pants.
Yeah. It is kind of fun. Yeah. But you still, but like, yeah, at least they're your pants.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Like you own those pants.
Yeah.
So,
well, and the vision thing is interesting that you mentioned that, because that's actually one of the things that really sold me with when Matt called that back in 2016, is he had a very clear vision, mission statement, core values, very, very clearly defined that we actually use. You know, we go back to those when we're making decisions, and often, and this is another huge difference between, you know, my experience in the corporate world, where the bottom line was gospel. Like we will make these decisions based on what's going to be best for the bottom line. And we have made many decisions where they were not necessarily best for the bottom line, but they were in adherence with our core values.
Yeah.
They were the right thing to do. And I love that more than
That's awesome.
Probably anything. Is just working in an environment, A, where people want to be there, and B, where we make actual value-based decisions to run the business is very rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. You kind of walked me right into one of the main reasons why I wanted you to come on. Is I do a little bit, I do mostly 90% of my work is in person. I have a small faction of online clients. I don't push it that hard, but it's there. I enjoy it a lot. I enjoy it's totally different, as you know, and as coaches out there know. In your opinion, and you've kind of already nailed this down a little bit, what do you think makes for a good online coach? What are some of the characteristics? I don't want to put a number on it, but what are some of the top characteristics you think an online coach should have?
Well, first and foremost, they need to have a good framework for how they coach, like a system for how they coach. Because you don't have as many tools at your disposal to be able to interact with the client in that real-time way where you sure. can, you can kind of riff or adapt in real time because they're right there in front of you. So you can almost do, you know, you can learn while you're coaching, really, like what's working for this person in the moment and
pull from adaptability probably.
Yeah. There's a lot more tools you can pull from in that. And I find that good online coaches have a system because otherwise the workflow for coaching online is unmanageable. It's, I think online coaching and asynchronous coaching works best when you can provide a high amount of value in a relatively short period of time, both for you, but also for the client. The client doesn't want to sit there and watch a 20-minute video.
Right. Exactly.
So a coach, a good coach, really what I think I'm getting at is that it's just like a cue, like, but it's delivered in a different format. A cue is an extremely highly valuable means of communicating a ton of information that the client can process and apply to their movement in real time that changes the movement pattern. The online coaching, at least the style that we do, which is, I jokingly say that we are little mini React video content creators. I don't know if you've seen the React video category on YouTube. Really popular. It's like one of the most popular format of content or video content in on social media and YouTube is people watching other people watch something. React to it, right?
Right.
And that's what our clients are doing, and they love it. They love seeing you, their coach, who cares about their training, react to their training and give what we've distilled into three primary buckets that our clients love: technical feedback, programming, and support. So a good online coach has a system of delivering technical feedback, programming, and support in a really tight package, a really condensed amount of time. On average, my videos are somewhere between 3 to 5 minutes.
Okay.
Probably closer to three over the years. And that's a skill that has had to be, that I've had to develop. It wasn't how I did it at first. Initially, it was all text-based feedback, really hyper-focused on the technical feedback.
Right.
And I remember hearing all the time, I wish I got more explanation of the programming or what you're doing or why you're doing it. And I just remember thinking, there's no way I have time to do that. Like, I'm already spending half my Sunday programming.
Sure.
I would save up all the programming until the end of the week.
Oh,
you know, and since then, now I program in real time with every single feedback. So in that 2 to 3 minutes of a video, I am literally watching their videos, giving them cues while showing them in real time how I'm modifying the program to be customized to them.
Yep.
And interacting with them. You know, a lot of times people will say they feel like they're having a conversation with me, even though it's one way.
Yeah.
Like, they'll react. They'll say things out loud to the camera, or there'll be stories where their spouse will hear them talking back to me in the video in the other room and be like, what are you doing?
That's so awesome.
I'm rambling a bit here, but I'd say the skill, that system of knowing how to distill your coaching model and deliver that in a very condensed, high value, way for me, that's video. I just don't know how you beat the amount of content and information that you can fit in a video versus text, versus a template, but it's as close as you can get to in-person coaching, while being asynchronous.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I like that a lot. And I think we and I have had a conversation about it where I've kind of gone back and forth with video feedback and with text feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of get the same thing, like when I'll there are certain movements, like the big movements, the main lifts, that I will tell people, hey, I need a video of this at this angle. And then, you know, I'll tell them exactly, I'll make a note exactly what I'm looking for, and little reminders and feedback. Yeah. Most of these people have actually trained in person. One, yes. I have a couple, I have not. So I kind of know what cues work for them. I write those in big, bold letters, and every once in a while I'll get a video and somebody will rack the bar. They'll put the dumbbells down and they will say out loud the cue, like almost mocking me. I'm like, well, at least you were thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, it worked.
Yeah. So, okay. So go ahead.
So I say that having that system in place, somebody who's got a solid mental model, obviously I would say a good online coach has in-person coaching experience. I don't know how you would go straight into online coaching without having done any in-person coaching.
Right.
So a lot of in-person coaching, a lot of lifting experience, I think is also critical. And I think this is really, you kind of quickly get into just being a good coach, really. I don't know that there's anything super unique to the online coaching piece other than building that skill set of delivering your coaching in a different medium. Yeah. And I would say, I guess as I'm talking out loud here, patience, which is a coaching skill that needs to be there anyways, but with asynchronous or online coaching, you're not able to do as much in one workout as you could in person. That's a just obvious limitation. If I'm working with somebody in person, I can fix maybe half a dozen setup things and maybe one or two, maybe even three different cues during the movement from set to set. Online, I'll get one setup, depending on how athletically inclined the person is, one setup and one movement cue, really. Because otherwise they start just having to, there's too many variables, there's too many things they're trying to figure out on their own.
Yep.
So instead of having, you know, let's say you're doing three sets of five, 15 reps to cue somebody, you usually have like one video for the squat for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll ask them to post their top set, and that gives me an opportunity to highlight two things. So you need to be able to take your model, and instead of fixing all the things you would in normally one session, you got to be able to sit in their shoes and imagine getting this information and go back to when you were still, you know, like first learning how to lift.
Yeah.
How much can you really process in one workout, you know, one video feedback where you're, oh, by the way, for me, I'm typically giving feedback on somewhere between 2 to 4 lifts.
Right.
They've got to remember that for 2 days later. So you just sort of have to be more patient and, you know, especially when I was newer at online coaching, I would carry a lot of almost like guilt that I wasn't fixing all the things or providing feedback to all the things that I was used to doing in person. I'm like, oh, this isn't as good. But in the long run, I mean, if you're working, some of my clients have been working with since they signed up on day one. I have still a couple that are from that early 2016, 2017 period. And well over 1,000 workouts. Am I worried about the first, you know, 10 workouts, you know, needing to take a little bit more time to fix the bar path or balance or, you know, the grip on the bar or whatever? It's like, if it takes 10 workouts instead of 2 workouts out of 1,000 or 1,500 workouts, I have a lot more patience with, and I actually almost look at it as a value add that they're having to do a little bit more work on their end to figure things out.
Right.
There's less hand-holding in the moment, you know?
Yeah. Which also brings back to what you said about having some in-person coaching experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember when I first started 17 years ago, I almost treated each session as, I'm going to show this person how much I know.
Say yes.
You know, and it takes you, I don't know how many years it took me to break that, because I was so, I just wanted them to know how much I know and all that. Blah, blah, blah. But then after a while, you understand that you have to learn what works for them.
Yes.
And then you take that one piece of knowledge that you might have learned from your first, you know, however many clients, handful of clients, and then you have to adapt that to the your entire career as a coach. So it's just interesting how like the evolution, and I see it in here with some of our younger coaches, that you at in the beginning you might not you might you like they kind of hold back their reins a little bit, and then they get comfortable, and a few years later it's almost like they're over speaking things.
Yeah.
And then you have a conversation with them about, hey, you know, it's there's a lot of information you gave back there, and did you notice that you still had to correct during the moment,
right?
Like, you know, what kind of feedback can you take from that little piece, you know, because they're
classic Dunning-Kruger curve, yeah. Right? You know,
it's, yes. And then you come back down, and then you realize, like, wow, it's this much, you know, an inch goes a mile with clients, and they come back in and they'll remember that one little piece,
right?
You know, just like on the simplest thing on how to rack a bar,
sure.
You know, finding a coaching cue on how to not, like, you're not looking side to side, you're walking straight in, whatever that works for you. In just those two little words works for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
The simplest thing will work over and over and over, and then you catch yourself. I do it. I still do it in between sets when it should be like, well, this is for more in person, but like when I catch myself over explaining my thought process, I still do that. Some people really get into it because they're like, wow, how this is so crazy. Like, you're tell me more about this. And then some people are like, you know, I just show up and do what you tell me to do, right? Like, whatever you have on your little pad of paper there, I don't really care. Like, okay, good.
I think that's an important conversation to have, explicit conversation to have, that it's funny you mentioned that, because I've over the years, I've sort of developed a bit of a, I don't know if it's a spidey sense. You just get that feel like this person's about to quit. And I've learned to ask questions before that, before I get that spidey sense.
Yeah.
Really, and it probably should just be part of the sign up process. You know, sometimes I do it better than others, but at some point, knowing whether they're the type of person that wants to know detail and learn,
and
understand what your thought process are, versus somebody who just, or even, you know, some people really want to be involved in the decision making process of their program over time as they become more experienced, and other people, I'll ask them the same question and they're like, dude.
Yeah.
You realize the reason I'm paying you is because I don't want to have to think about this.
Yeah. Like, it's 100%. We've been doing the same model for 15 years. And every time you come in, I still have to tell you these three things. And there's like, that's your job. I'm like, okay, I got it. That's fine.
Yep. Which is harder to do. I guess I would say that's something that as an online coach, you have to be, I think, more proactive about looking for those cues, because in person, you have all that time in between sets. You have more input, more data on their body language, their mood, their energy level, their bar speed while they're warming up, opportunity to just connect that you don't as an online or an asynchronous coach. So you have to build, I think you have to add, or at least I've noticed over the years, I've added more into my coaching practice that proactively looks for that information. So I track metrics on every single workout about the duration of the workout, their fatigue, and the perceived difficulty of the workout, which are slightly different things in my mind. Fatigue is sort of like, what's your general energy level throughout the day workout, you know, that just sort of feeling you have when you wake up in the morning, at the end of the day, like, are you just getting worn out? And then difficulty, you know, some people can be low fatigue, but it's a really hard workout.
Yeah.
Some people can be high fatigue, but it was a easy workout. So like, I like tracking those things. Duration is such a simple metric that I've ended up thinking that duration is maybe one of the most important variables of my program that I didn't pay attention to, because when I was doing it in person, you have these kind of set blocks of time. People will come in for their hour, their 90-minute session, whatever it is. And so you have this natural constraint that when you're programming online, especially if you we use a what's called minimum effective dose programming, where things kind of like incrementally ratchet stress up over time. And next thing you know, when I wasn't collecting that, I would get a comment like, man, this workout's starting to take me like 2 hours. And I was like, oof, that was
yikes. Yeah.
Not my intention. I really apologize about that. I wish you had said something earlier. And now I get every single workout, like how long is this taking? Some people I know can push up to 90 minutes. They like the 90-minute workout, but most people, I'm at that 45 to 60 minute workout.
Mm-hmm.
And if that pops up, it's another opportunity for me to ask a question like, hey, what happened here? Oh, my son came in. I had to go take care of that, just stretched out the workout, whatever. So like, I think a skill of being proactive about pulling information, more of that subjective information, that you get just by nature being in the room with somebody else is an important skill.
Yeah. And that's actually, I wrote that down because I might, depending on the feedback I get in each movement, I'll occasionally ask that, how long does this workout take? How long did this workout take you? Yep. But at the end of each week for my online clients, I will have a series of weekly check-in questions.
Yeah.
I actually basically have five set throughout the month. So basically you get asked the same in rotation, and, it could be anything from, protein intake,
yep,
as a check-in, because I want to know like how they're doing, all the way to, over this past week, how would you rate this week, this block of training?
Yeah.
And, on a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being you have crushed it, you nailed every single thing that we put out there. Mm-hmm. 1 being like, I felt like I wanted to quit every time I walk in the gym.
Right.
So anyway, there's a lot of different pieces of information. Another thing that you brought up a little bit ago was if you were just getting into coaching, don't wait, even in-person coaching, don't wait until the end of the week to do all of your coaching updates at one time. Do it live. Save yourself a lot of time right now. I know you think it might be easy to sit down, but man, workout to workout is the way to go. And I wish someone had told me that like years ago when I first started the online process, because I was saving everything up and I was dropping everything down and rehashing, and it would take me, an hour to do one person. And it was just too time consuming.
That's one of the things that I've brought from the lean manufacturing background and applied to how we design Turnkey Coach, the software that we're using, that I think of lean manufacturing principles as sort of the calculus of managing workflow, where you're trying to optimize the smallest increment of time that you can work. So a lot of the tools that are baked into how Turnkey Coach works are geared towards enabling you to break the workout, the workflow up into small increments of time, because that allows you to identify and eliminate waste. And I define waste very specifically as anything that the client is not willing to pay for. Mm. So the classic analogy that I always give is that when you go to get your car fixed, you don't want to have to pay for the mechanic to find their tools, or fill out the paperwork, or talk to their supervisor, or take a smoke break. You want to pay for the part that they're replacing, the new part that you'd have to go buy if you were doing it yourself, and the labor that is actually applied to installing the part. Like, those things are valuable to you, because if you were to try to do that on your own, you'd have to buy the part anyway, and you'd probably spend more time than the expert would. Same thing is true with the coach. Your client doesn't care how much effort you have to put into the things that they want to pay for, which is, again, what we found from our clients is technical feedback, the programming, and support, sort of this general relationship bucket. So we want to be able to identify in our workflow anything that's not contributing directly to those three things that add value to our clients, and either automate it or eliminate it.
Yeah.
And again, the best way to do that is to be able to study the smallest increment of time. So when we do time studies on our workflow, as an example, I will set up a camera and I'll actually like recording my lift. I will record myself coaching and I'll watch my keyboard strokes, the mouse movement, how many, you know, what I'm doing on the screen, how many times I'm having to scroll up or down, how many different times I'm having to leave the page, and systematically identify anything that's not in the value category or categorized as things that are adding value and either eliminate or automate them.
Okay.
Real small example that ended up saving me just ridiculous hours of time is that when I was using a screen recording solution, third party, I'd have to start the recording, stop the recording, rename it, download the file to my hard drive, upload it to YouTube or upload it to Google Drive, get the link, and then paste it into the software that we were using. And oftentimes I would also throw into the mix an error of copying and pasting the wrong link.
Yeah.
And so now my client is getting not only what they didn't pay for, but they're seeing me coach somebody else, which is really cringy.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. So we built into the software, that whole thing is completely integrated and automated. And so I have zero incorrect videos uploaded and I have zero time spent on all the admin of that video. Doesn't sound like much, but if I'm doing 20 to 30 workouts,
it's big.
That adds up. And then to your point about the programming specifically, it not only did it by doing it in real time, eliminate the context switching and the setup and the shutdown time and just the fatigue of trying to do one big programming block.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm splitting it up into the individual workouts, again, going to that smallest increment of time.
Yep.
So I've eliminated all that, the waste that comes from that. And I've now incorporated that, folded it into the value that I'm adding to the client. So 7 years ago, I'd get comments like, man, I wish I knew what my coach was doing by program. Now, especially for clients where I've worked with them for several months or years, I would say most of what I'm talking about is what I'm doing with the programming. And in real time, I'm showing in split screen, here's what I'm doing with your program. They can see me customizing it, modifying it, adjusting it based on what I'm seeing in their workout today. And then what I want them to do on the next workout or next week, whenever it is that they come back to that. So it's not only more efficient, but it's a higher value add for the client.
Absolutely.
Which is another key thing that I took the dark side of lean manufacturing and process improvement is that you just keep cutting and cutting and cutting to the point that it's taking away value from the client. And that's a misapplication of lean principles, where really lean process improvement should only be eliminating or automating waste, things that don't add value. And value should only go up while inefficiencies go down.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we're going to wrap things up here, but we talked a little bit about what makes a good online coach.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that you've noticed makes a really like an ideal online client? And I'm not saying this to say, hey, if you're an online client, like do this, mm-hmm. but more from a coach perspective.
Sure.
When you're onboarding someone, what is something that you would say? Well, let me put it this way. Maybe if you are someone thinking about finding an online coach, what are some things that they should expect? Versus being an in-person client?
The online client, the ones that have stuck around to work with me, I would say value their time at a high price point. Those are at least the ones that stick around.
Yeah.
And they recognize that the value you're providing is helping them use their time more efficiently.
Yeah.
For me personally, my target demographic is going to be that working professional between 30 to 55. They're usually kind of senior level employees or professionals or entrepreneurs. but that I think is very dependent on the individual coach. I think that the coach out there looking for a client, we talked about this in a, I think the Academy and in some of our podcasts in the past about identifying your VIP, you know, your, basically your, man, I'm actually, I just blanked on the acronym, but values, identity and priorities. So, you know, basically know yourself, because the type of person that's going to work well with you is somebody who's probably going to align pretty close with your VIP, and your experience. I have a couple exceptions where I have clients who are doing, you know, who have a very different experience in their training life than me. But for the most part, people are pretty dang close to having some sort of athletic background, some sort of professional career, and right, they're trying to fit their training in family and work and life. And that's kind of my sweet spot.
Yeah.
So I would suggest that, and this is also this one of those things that a new coach probably has a hard time doing, because you just want to work with everybody.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But you can spend so much time and energy on people that will never be a good fit if they're just not in alignment with who you are as a coach.
Exactly.
It takes a lot of maturity and risk that you're taking to say, hey, we might not be a good fit.
Yep.
And I don't know how you learn that without just doing a bunch of reps, just like the other learning curve.
100%.
You just got to start and do it and figure out who's a good fit for you. But I do think there's value in thinking about your values, your identities, and your identity and your priorities, so that you can kind of help maybe narrow that client down.
Yeah.
So I guess that's one thing. One is, I would say, identify who your ideal client profile is, your ICP. Thing two that I notice in terms of ideal clients that stick with it for a long period of time. We actually talked about this on our podcast last week. They have three behavior patterns that we notice. One, they are able to look ahead and plan for how they are going to fit training in their life. And I think a coach can help a lot with that. But the ones that are successful are able to think into the future and organize their schedule or their life, or be proactive on their travel to go find the gym, to invest in a home gym, to invest in a local gym that they like training at, et cetera. They're able to look back and identify behavior patterns that they want to change and feed that into their plan for the future, and model behavior patterns that support their image as a future, or their vision as for the future. Again, I think a good coach will help with both ends of that perspective. Mm-hmm. And then they tend to be, though not always, and again, this is one where the coach can help them focus on now, like what's happening right now, and how can I emotionally detach from the gaps between my expectations for the future, or sometimes people will still hold themselves accountable for their expectations of their past.
Yeah.
And focus on what do I need to do right now to move me closer to my plan, my vision for the future.
Sure.
And again, I think a coach can be a huge asset in helping people do those things. But what we mm-hmm. notice is online clients that are successful are able to kind of thrive in that framework, particularly figuring out how to prioritize training to fit in their life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things that has helped me a lot in in-person training and in online training is having maybe a system where you can kind of go through like a triage and you can kind of flesh those things out, but they have to be, the person has to be willing to go through and answer some hard questions.
Yes.
And know exactly where they stand and be honest about it, because a lot of people you will get into, and people can fudge answers, and then you get into it and you find yourself pushing that one workout, you know, down the road. Then you have to have the hard conversation and say, hey, remember back when you answered this question about mm-hmm. your motivation, and then there's, you know, three different tiers of motivation, and you're talking, and then it comes out to like, cool. You know what? I really don't want to do this. And then it's mm-hmm. like, okay, but you know, we could have had that conversation a month ago instead so of.
You do have that. You have a concrete system for walking
yeah,
through that.
Yeah. So cool. I, in person and in, and for online, I just send it. It's a questionnaire and nice. I'll break it down. And then if it seems like a good fit, hey, let's jump on a 15-minute phone call for online and for in person. If it's not a good fit, I can just say it's not a good fit. However, we have other coaches over here that can help. For online, I can't do that. I don't have that option for pushing people out in my little network here. But I usually just say something like, you know, it doesn't seem like a good fit right now. Maybe we can check back in later. Here, join my wait list, perfect. Kind of thing. Yeah. And it's and then I can keep it in the back and then, you know, give it 3 months, 3 months down the road. So
check back in with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one of the differences there, I think that I think is the crux of the hybrid model, which I think is in theory, the ideal way to do it. I think what you're doing is the ideal, because breaking out and getting new clients online only is really tough.
It is. Yeah.
We spend so much time and energy on marketing for Barbell Logic and content and just being present in all the different platforms. And it just still feels like we're battling, you know, to get new clients. With the in-person presence, you've got sort of a somewhat of a natural lead magnet.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is you attract people that really value that in-person time and might not be able to, or like they sort of depend on the accountability of showing up for that time slot as part of the service.
Yes.
Whereas an online person, going back to that planning piece of the model, they have to be able to, and again, sometimes with the help of a coach, like you got to help people think through it sometimes, but they've got to be able on their own initiative to make that happen.
Yes, and exactly.
It becomes very easy to, I just was tired after I got home from work and dog ate my homework kind of stuff.
Right.
That they eventually just they're going to fizzle out.
And I've noticed that the easiest thing for me to do for an online client, you can kind of see the trend before it happens. It's one missed workout, no big deal. It's the same missed workout every single week for the next for 6 weeks. And you're like, hey, let's check in on this. But then when it comes to a constantly, you know, if you only have 2 to 3 workouts program, that's like, hey, how about we do, I want you, what's your, it looks like you've been hitting your workouts every Thursday pretty consistently. Right. You know, you've got an 80% rate here of hitting this Thursday workout, maybe not all of it. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to move you from having, you know, 3 to 4 movements. We're going to do 2 movements in this one workout, and let's see how we can do. And if we can hit that consistently, then we'll add a second day back in. How about that? And you can see like there, it's almost like this relief, like, oh, okay, great. Yeah. This shouldn't be but again, going back to the middle of our conversation, it takes reps over time, because like a younger coach might just think like, hey, you're being lazy. Like, stop being lazy. Totally. Show up.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the, I would say, biggest advantages of the asynchronous model is that you've now opened that range of, especially if they've got a home gym. I have like probably the biggest breakthrough for me in terms of retention has been the willingness for me to go down to even one lift a day.
Yeah, man. Yep.
You know, and completely just blow the programming structure up that I started with into this, again, almost like the smallest increment of time element.
Mm-hmm.
I had a guy who had his third kid about a year ago, and I had that spidey sense, and he set up a call. I was like, oh, here it comes. He's going to quit. And he's like, man, I'm loving the program. He'd been crushing it, hitting PRs. He was on a 4-day split, doing kind of an upper lower split, going really hard, tons of accessories, former CrossFit guy, could do so much work. And he's like, I just don't think I could do this. And I was like, well, what if we didn't do that anymore? We just made something that you could do. And he's like, oh, okay. So we went down to one lift a day.
Perfect.
His numbers reset pretty hard when the baby first came. But then within 3-4 months, he was actually hitting PRs on one lift a day, doing like 15-minute workouts.
Yeah, man, probably. Yeah, your body's so beat up. You're underslept. You're undernourished. Next thing you know, that's actually what I have. So actually, my son turns 1 today. So we have a 5-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old son. So his birthday, happy birthday, Weston.
Nice.
my wife, who I actually train, who I know that some people think that's a sin, don't
Wow,
do it, but
that's
she's freaking, she is an anomaly. And I say that in a lot of words. Number one, because she's married to me, but also her training habits is, yesterday she even said, she's like, hey, I want to work out tomorrow. Meaning like get home so I can work out, because she knows she has a workout waiting for her. But you know, this is different because she gets to have face-to-face time with me too. And sure. I don't always coach her in person. I might coach her in person like once every 3 months, but in time, we have even dialed her to like two lifts per workout. Like she'll have an intensity lift and she'll have a volume lift, or she'll have, you know, she'll have a, like a light work, a light lift and a heavy lift. And we titrate all those. And she kind of told me, she's like, I don't need, like, yeah, you've got biceps at the end as an option. She's like, just take those off. Like, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
But that's a little bit different. My point being is you have to approach those things and let those people know that it's your job to figure it out and to help them through it. Like, it doesn't have to be, this is not a binary thing where you're either doing it or you're not doing it.
Right.
Everything can adjust. I had that conversation with a good friend that I train online. And just last Friday, hopped on a quick call. And he was, you know, he's all of a sudden, I was on vacation and I came back and checked his workouts. He had all these different notes and he'd missed a lot of different workouts. And I think, like, looking back at it, I think he was just feeling beat up. He's got a very demanding job. The workouts, he's very strong, and just kept climbing, climbing, climbing. We'd have a little deload, climb, 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 a little deload. And I was like, hey man, we're going to dial it back. We're going to switch programs. Here's what that program looks like. And just giving him that view of what's to come.
Yes.
He was like, you know what? If you think this is going to work, let's keep going.
Nice.
So give.
You've seen that there's a study, I think it's like 7 years old now at this point, but this guy, John Kiley, can't remember his first name, but he did a study of all kinds of different programming methodology. And he found that client buy-in was the number one predictor of performance. Like, he was basically disproving periodization was sort of the tagline that, you know, he set out to study whether periodization worked. And it was like, well, really the biggest buy-in variable is client buy-in. Like, if you can get your client all in, then now your probability of success just went through the roof. So I think that's really crucial.
Isn't the old like training tech or saying is like, any program is going to work. You just have to stick with the program.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to, you're going to get some kind of results. There are better programs out there. Like, you
sure,
know,
sure.
We could talk. That's a whole different podcast. But
get in the internet debate there of programming. Geez. Like, consistency and sticking with some sort of plan is what I've seen get the best results. But yeah, that's awesome that you're checking in with people, and it goes back to that being proactive about trying to read the body language and pick up on these little subtle cues, you know, and listening to what your clients need and want, and making sure that you know they've got that range, which Gat goes back to the coaching thing, that just needing reps to get comfortable and more familiar with as broad a palette of exercises, set and rep combinations, programming structures, and do them yourself. You know, like, I have a hard time. I can't say that I've done every single program that I've ever signed, because they all become so infinitely customized that, but you know, the main structure I've done. But if you find yourself consistently giving people a program you've never done, that might be a sign that something
needs to
right.
change. Yeah.
It's just so hard to empathize with what they're going through.
100%. Yeah. Well, Andrew, this has been an awesome conversation. And if anybody has any questions, comments, concerns, where's the best place to get a hold of you?
ajackson@barbell-logic.com or at Andrew Barbender on the socials.
Dude, that's a pretty killer.
Yeah, I got in
That's
early.
That's a pretty killer one. Yeah.
It was right when the last Airbender was coming out.
And you got in early on it. Okay.
Yep. So got the Barbender in there. So.
All right. Awesome, man. Well, hey, again, thanks, Andrew. And I hope people do reach out. It's good talking to you. Keep in touch, and we'll chat real soon.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate you having me on.